At 4.2 million unemployed, there are now 1.4 million, 1,400,000 more workers out pounding the pavement than a year ago. The number of jobless seems sure to continue its climb. Normally, it takes a growth rate in the economy of more than 4% to absorb new workers into the labor force and to reabsorb those displaced as productivity improves. The economy is far from that rate of growth. In the current quarter, the rate may be only about 1% or so, just enough to make room for new workers. The picture is actually a bit darker than the unemployment rate suggests. I'm still quoting. As jobs become tougher to find, marginal job seekers are dropping out of the labor market, thus holding down growth in the labor force and the reported unemployment rate. In other words, people don't make themselves available for jobs as they used to because they think it's hopeless. Quoting again, it is becoming harder to find part-time work too. The unemployment rate for 9.5 million workers in the part-time labor force has soared to 8% from 0.6 and 0.4% last May. The number of hardcore unemployed is increasing steadily. Those who are jobless for 15 weeks or longer now make up 17% of the total unemployment. And that figure will go up as the recently unemployed facing an even tougher job market join the long-term unemployed. Economic consultant Townsend Greenspan and Company, predicting only a modest economic recovery for the next year, says that a steady increase in the number of jobless will produce a 6% rate of unemployment by the summer, the late summer of 1971. Now there's the picture. Now, I submit you didn't hear that today. I submit that isn't what you're being told from the White House. That isn't what you're being told by the Secretary of Commerce. But that's what people know. And that's what the businessman knows. And that's why he's cutting back on capital construction. That's why he's cutting back on equipment. And that's why the economy is stagnant. Now, I shan't burden you tonight with all of the facts of the previous years. I can only say this, that in 1968, at the end of our administration, we had an inflation rate in this country of about 4.5%. That was too high. We can't say the lay the whole blame on the opposition. But I can tell you that the inflation rate has gone up and up. Until today, it's in excess of 6%. And I don't call that controlling it. We had less than 4%, 3.3% unemployment. And productivity was up. And wages were up. Today, 5.1%. I think you also remember that when Jack Kennedy called the kingpins of the steel industry to the White House and told them he wanted steel prices rolled back, and they were. He didn't announce when he became president that go to it, boys. Just take it into your own hands, which is exactly what was announced in February 1969. Remember when Lyndon Johnson told the copper magnates that if they let copper prices rise, he would supply the market with copper from government stockpiles, and copper prices were kept down. They've gone up 45% since the administration announced in early 1969 that there'd be no interference at all by the White House. Anything goes. And we're suffering the worst sustained inflation since 25 years. And a lot of irresponsible talk is taking place about you, Mr. Labor Man. There are people putting the blame right on your back. And I don't think you're fighting back like you ought to. And I'm going to help you. Because I've spent a lot of time studying economics. It's part of my business, part of my work. I graduated in the field of economics and political science, and I've been working at it ever since. And I learned more economics in a South Dakota dust storm than I learned in 7 years at college. You pick up the paper and you read about the automobile negotiations. And before the negotiations ever take place, the Ford Motor Company announces a rise in the price of automobiles. Did anybody figure out how much that cost the consumer? Not a bit. Before a construction worker ever gets a new contract, they raise the price of cement, the price of steel, sand and gravel, brick and mortar. But what to the people here? The people here, it's your fault. Now, what are the facts? I don't say your paragon's a virtue. Who is? But when the hunting season is wide open and the White House and the government says go to it, I think it's pretty obvious that some people are going to go to it on both sides of the table. Let me tell you one lesson that is indisputable. Nobody proves to the contrary, never has. Wages always fall or lag behind prices. You'll never catch up. You may think you're going to. You may negotiate a great contract. You may get your workers one of the great big increases. But mark my words, somebody else sets the price. The purchasing power of dollars and dollars for the weekly average weekly earnings of the American factory production workers have declined $2. Declined in real purchasing power since 1965, from $88.06 to $86.07 in 1970. American working man's not helped by inflation. He's helped by increased productivity and by reasonable price security. And that's what we've been trying to get. And if this Republican administration won't exert its prestige, its moral force, and its high office to control inflation and to roll back unemployment, then the Congress must assume that responsibility. Have any of you forgotten, or have you forgotten, that there's a law in the book known as the Employment Act of 1946? Let's talk about law and order for a while. That law requires the government of the United States to establish policies, economic policies, that assure maximum employment. That's the law of the land. Just as much as there's a law against kidnapping, ladies and gentlemen. The commonly called the Full Employment Act of 46. That law requires the government, makes it mandatory, that the government pursue economic policies to provide for maximum employment. I accuse this administration of violating the law. Let them clean their stables. They are pursuing a policy which promotes inflation, which promotes unemployment. And they are unabashed, unashamed about it. As a matter of fact, Barron's Weekly, one of the most conservative financial journals in the United States, recently ran a feature article saying that this is the first time in the history of this republic that the government of the United States has, by premeditation, established a policy to promote economic stagnation and to encourage unemployment. They said it was necessary to fight inflation. They violate the law. And what's more is they do great damage, great injury to our economy, to our people. Now, a lot of our industries today are really almost monopolistic, or they're what we call oligopolies. And I think that if the White House won't do anything about these things, then Congress has got to do it, as I said, and they can call to the committee witness table all those who put their pocketbook before the national welfare, including bankers who stick it to us with unconscionable, usurious interest rates. Don't go blaming your little hometown banker. You ain't got anything to do about it at all. This is all done by the Federal Reserve Board and a half a dozen big banks in this country that control the finance of this nation. Unless you have a government that understands that it's supposed to control it. Big business and big banks need to be brought to the court of public opinion. And I intend to help get it done. We've heard a lot of talk recently about tight money. And tight money is why the construction industry is down 20% below last year. Tight money is part of Republican economics. Tight money is what raises bankers' profits and puts working men and women out of work and causes farmers great distress. Tight money is made by the Federal Reserve Board. The Federal Reserve Board, ladies and gentlemen, they're not elected, they're appointed. They create the amount of money available to you, to bankers, to businessmen, to everybody. That's why President Nixon appointed his old friend Arthur Burns to head the Federal Reserve Board. You remember Mr. Burns. He was the one who questioned how there could be any poverty in rural America, because he said that's where people have yards in which to grow things. What an astute observation. Oh, yes. The Federal Reserve Board is not responsive to the needs of working people and working men and women in America. And one of the reasons for this is that working people have no representation on that board, despite the fact that their decisions affect your lives and my life and everybody else's. The time has come for the workers of America to be represented in the councils that decide their fate. And I propose, when I'm your senator and as your senator, to do something about it. The Federal Reserve Act must be amended to provide for labor representation. And I might add that our farm friends need a genuine farmer representation too. And it can be done. And it is going to be done. Now let me end up by saying this. We are today afflicted by Republican no-growth economic policies. And these no-growth economic policies must be turned around, because if they're not, they become contagious. This recession, and that's what it is, despite all the window dressing, has cost the federal government in lost revenues an estimated $19 billion. Now that was printed in the bank newsletter of the Bank of New York. That's not a Democratic House organ. For this year alone, we will have lost $40 billion in potential output on an average rate of growth of 3%. Just washed it down the river. A new form of pollution. A continuation of these Republican restrictive economic policies runs the risk, according to that same newsletter, of losing $1 billion per week, $1 billion per week in American productive potential in 1971, $52 billion. And when I hear people say, well, we can't afford this, and we can't afford money for our teachers, we can't afford money for our police officers, for our firemen, we can't afford money for books, as I said this afternoon, we can't afford money for our veterans, we can't afford money to build up our cities, we can't afford money to clean up our air and the water, and we've been getting a whole laundry list of what we can't afford to do. I say to this government, start living by the law, the Employment Act of 1946. Start thinking about people instead of a lot of charts. Quit trying to just reorganize and reshuffle the deck. Come up with some policies. Think about how government can serve the national interest. Think about what it can do to help people that desperately need help. I want to go back to the Senate for one reason. I think I know how to work in that body. If I thought that I had nothing to offer, I'd stay right home here and start to enjoy and continue to enjoy the good life that I've been enjoying. It's no secret, I've been having a good time. I got the swimming pool paid for, and I love it. I've traveled, I've been around with my family and my friends, we've had parties, we've had more fun at home in the last year and 9 months than I've had in 20 years. And it was not an easy decision, as these men know at this table, as to whether or not I would run. But I had some dreams for this country, and I enunciated them through the static and the noise of 1968. I doubt that enough people heard them, because I think if they had, we would have had a little different outcome. I don't intend to relive those days. They're gone. But I know there are people in this country that don't have good representation. I know there are people in this country that don't have business agents. I know there are people in this country that need help. And I know that this country has tremendous vitality. I think its best days are yet to be lived. I don't think it's done. I don't think that it is washed up. I don't even think it's sick. I think it's in trouble. I think it's going through a turbulent period. I think it's going through unbelievable ferment and change. But in all of this, there's great creativity. New music, new ideas, new literature, new construction, new thought. Wonderful things can happen. But none of it's going to happen unless there is a sense of direction. And I intend, with your help, to go back there to the Senate of the United States, where I lived for 16 years and worked. Not full-time, overtime, ladies and gentlemen, overtime. And I intend to go back there to do the things that you've been asking to have done in this country. To help get our cities, once again, livable. To make our streets not only safe, but pleasant. To not only build houses, but have neighborhoods in which friends live. To continue the battle in this country for racial justice. I intend to go back there to right some old wrongs. Yes, if need be, to shake up the system of the Congress itself. I intend to go back there to represent people that have no voice today. The elderly, who are brushed aside in the name of controlling inflation. Shame on you, Mr. Government. Imagine people in St. Paul, just to pick an example, 600 elderly promised by their government that there would be senior citizen housing, 1,000 people to be cared for, 600 families, or couples or individuals, but 1,000 people involved, the land purchased, the contract drawn up, the plans of the buildings completed, the negotiations completed, and then in the name of fighting inflation, to tell these poor people, all of whom are poor, all of whom have suffered too long, to tell them that it's canceled. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you put Hubert Humphrey back in the United States Senate, and it'll not be canceled. I'll raise so much cane down there that they'll build high-rise apartments just to shut me up. Don't tell me this country can't afford to take care of its elderly. It's outrageous to even contemplate to the contrary. Immoral. Don't tell me that we can't feed our hungry. Don't tell me that we can't provide school lunches and school milk for our children. And I intend, before this campaign's over, to outline to you how we can provide health care, nutritional care for our children. I spoke of it briefly this afternoon. Don't tell me we can't build houses for our people. Listen, if the late Senator Robert Patch could be the author of a bill that said that the policy of the government of the United States is a decent home for every American, if he could say that in 1948, don't tell me that we can't do it in the 1970s. I intend to see that it's done. I know it's more difficult to do it from the Senate, but we'll get it done. Housing is no longer just economics. Housing is a social necessity. And we're not only going to build office buildings in this country and up, we're not office buildings and country clubs and racetracks. We've got to clean out the filth and the dirt of our cities. We've got to provide decent homes for people. How do you expect people to act decently if they live in filth and degradation and poverty? We're going to lead a battle in this country for the things that need to be done. And I want your help. I don't want to just get elected. I want you to battle with me, to fight with me. I want you to go out now as you've never gone before to get a job done. This administration can't last forever. And in the meantime, we're not going to let them roll back our progress in this country.
First of all, he's concerned about those who are in the dawn of life, our children. Their education, their nutrition, their social environment. Then it must have a government that is concerned about those who are in the shadows of life, the disabled, the crippled, the mentally retarded, the physically handicapped. We must be able to take care of these people. And then thirdly, a government that's worthy of any respect must have deep concern about and must take action in behalf of those who are in the twilight of life, our senior citizens. Those who have worked and given of themselves and now are at that point in their life where they deserve a little leisure, but above all, they deserve a sense of dignity and of respect from their fellow citizens and their government, the government of the people, by the people, and for the people.
Time for this recorded political program was paid for by the Humphrey Volunteer Committee.